I'm going to keep mentioning that drummer. I think more away teams should.
You're going to keep
drummers.
Banging the drum about it.
I'm going. Please don't.
The points just keep on coming in for Yapstam and Reading. They climb to third in the championship on the back of their fourth successive win. It's a second successive 3-0 victory that leaves us thinking, what could possibly happen next? Are we destined for the Premier League, or are our hopes about to be dashed? We will discuss that and much, much more on the Tull SM Podcast episode 107, because as the points pile up, so are the injuries for Yapstam. We'll look at a growing injury list, and it's not just injuries on the pitch that we've got to worry about. We've got injuries in the studio, as one Handbags Harris can't join us this week as he is unwell. So get well soon, Handbags Harris. But my name is Dan Wimbush, editor of the Tull SM End, and I'll be guiding you through the next hour or so alongside Tull SM End deputy editor Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Yeah, surprisingly, I'm the fittest other person that we've got in the Tull SM End ranks, which, anyone who's seen me would certainly not say that I'm in 100% condition.
You know, you're battling through. Have you got one of those little yellow injury icons that you get in Football Manager next to you?
I think so. I think I'm just lacking match practice, as is everyone, to be fair.
Yeah, I'll give you a few injections to get you through the next hour or so, and then we'll assess your fitness afterwards.
Okay. If I sound particularly perky off the back of this next upcoming link, then that's the reason why.
Well, very much so. As I said, lots to discuss, including a second 3-0 win. It's not very often we've been able to say that in recent years. So we'll get into that and much, much more in the next couple of minutes. But just a very quick plug for the crowdfunding campaign at patreon.com/thetullSM End. It's been humbling to see the amount of people that have stepped up to the plate and have given their hard-earned cash over to us and donated so that we can help grow this podcast, and also as a little bit of a boost for us as a team. So thank you very much indeed. Got a few shout-outs to give for people that have donated to Ozma Salim, even. Sorry, I've probably butchered your name there, so there goes that donation. Jack Simons, Royce Murphy, to Kevin, to Andrew Feline, Lou Burton, Hugh Willis, and Jorge Clay, or George Clay? I don't know. Again, I apologise for everyone whose names I'm butchering. That's what you get for crowdfunding an unprofessional joke of a podcast. But no, thank you to all of those and everyone else who has donated as well. As mentioned, it is the Tull SM End. It is patreon.com/thetullSM End. That's patreon.com/thetullSM End. There's a link that will be attached to this very episode as well. So thank you very much. And without further ado, let's get on with it, Johnny. Let's get into the recap.
View from the Tull SM End.
Recapping this week's championship action. Reading 3, Burton Albion 0. Johnny, it's the biggest win we've seen at the Menaceki Stadium for some time, I think since the 5-1 win over Ipswich last season. And two 3-0 wins in a row, four wins in the league, and four clean sheets as well. If you asked Yapstam his targets for those next four games, I think he'd struggle to better that.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, I think in all these games, we've looked very convincing as well. And that's the most important thing because, as I've said repeatedly on this podcast, I think towards the early stages of the season, we were getting a lot of results without necessarily looking like we deserved them or without being the better side, I'd say. Whereas throughout the previous three games, I think we were most definitely the better team. And then you come onto this Burton game as well, and we dominated from start to finish, going in 2-0 up at half-time, completely in control of things. I thought the levels dropped a little bit in the second half, but that was a bit understandable. But then I think it just showed the quality that we have, that we can bring on someone like Yaku Mate, who's still very raw and doesn't have too much experience at this level, and he can bang in the third, whereas Burton ultimately knocked on the door but just found Ali Alhabsi or the defence far too good for them.
Yeah, I'm not quite ready to give Yaku Mate that goal just yet. I think
I think
banged it in. I think we'll give him the assist. Certainly gets the assist.
I think we'll give him the assist.
But we'll come on to that very shortly. But you mentioned young talent up front, Dominic Samuel. We've discussed him on this podcast several times since the previous 106 episodes. His name's come up a fair few times. Hard to believe, Johnny, but he made his debut 4 years ago now, and this was his very first league start. Couldn't have asked for a better return from it. Gets his goal within, 20-odd minutes of it. What did you make of his performance?
Well, I thought he offered something that was different to Jan Kermagant. I mean, Jan Kermagant, we know what he is. He's a target man. He's not going to beat you with pace. What he's going to beat you with is his nous and his strength and I think his aerial ability. Whereas Dominic Samuel, obviously what he relies on is his pace. I'm just going to bring this up randomly. I can't quite believe Dom Samuel's physique. I mean, he's 23 years old, but he looks like a sort of a lanky 17 or 18 year old, doesn't he?
He
doesn't look to have much sort of muscle on him. But obviously that plays into the way he plays, which is his pace. And I think with the new formation, and we had Gareth McCleary and Dominic Samuel sort of playing up front, running into the channels and, you know, getting that space over the top and between the lines, that really worked out well. And I think for Dominic Samuel's goal, it was a great piece of work from, I think it's Jordan Nabita who puts in the original challenge to win it back, isn't it?
I think so. And then it comes to Behrens.
Then to Behrens. And, well, I think like Yaku Mate claiming the goal. I'm not sure whether Roy Behrens will claim that was a cross. I think he may have been going for goal when he put it across. But, you know, Dom Samuel does what he does. Fantastic pace, fantastic finish at the back post from a very tight angle. And I think you've got to be pleased with what you saw from Dom Samuel. He got the goal, but he also looked very lively as well. And like I said, he gave you that different dimension to what Jan Kermagant gives you. And I think especially in games where perhaps we're away from home or we're not expecting to have as much possession and we're going to be hitting teams on the counter, he's going to be a valuable asset to have.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it's a real contrast on what we've seen from Jan. And if you go over to thetylersen.com, you can read a sort of statistical look at using info maps and clips that I've picked out from the game to sort of look at his debut and what he did and how he compares to Jan. And as you mentioned, it's just a different option. You know, in the first few minutes, there was a ball over the top and Samuel sort of muscled his way past and had the pace to get away from his defender, got a shot away. It was, well, I think it hit the side netting. But then minutes later, you mentioned, he's in the right place at the right time. Now, this wasn't a guy that was, you know, completely changed the face of the game. I don't think this is a, you know, a Wayne Rooney at Everton sort of impact where you think, where have we got this guy from? Why has he not been playing? But he did exactly what he does well. The comparison I sort of drew in that, in the article, again, you can read on the website, was that, to me, he seemed more of a Cureton or an Adam Lafondre type. You mentioned his physique, you know, he's a tall lad, but in the air, he's pretty ineffective. I think there were two aerial duels he had on the day, didn't win either of them. Now, you know, it's very small sample size, two in a 64-minute spell. But if you compare that to Jan Kermagant, who I think had, I think he won 6 out of 11 against Forest in the previous home game. A, Kermagant's obviously more successful, and B, it showed that the team were trying to hit him more in the air. They weren't trying to do that to Dom. As you mentioned, they were trying to, they had that option suddenly of getting, you know, playing slide passes, getting quick balls across the box. Right place at the right time, great finish as well. Very promising start from me. He did have some questions to answer. I remember chatting to Charles on the podcast Extra just before the game and saying that against Yeovil in the Chequered Trophy when he played up front for the under-23s, I didn't think he did particularly much. And admittedly, Charles said he was dealing with an illness. But this was the first chance we really had to see him against Championship opposition. And we can see now why, when he was on loan at places like Gillingham and Coventry, he was getting goals. But I think he also saw just in those 64 minutes maybe why he wasn't playing every week for those teams and why he's not played for Reading, because his overall contribution to the team performance, he was very much that arrowhead. He was there to attack and he didn't contribute to a lot else. You didn't see him a lot in his own box. I don't think he touched the ball in the Reading box. He wasn't doing what Kermagant does, but nod headers away and be that real harrying force and help you preserve the lead. But then I guess he didn't have to, because Burton didn't offer a lot, did they?
No, I mean, I'd go as far as to say that I think Burton were probably the worst team we've seen here since Preston on the opening day. I think other teams have come here and lost heavily and had chances. I particularly think of the Nottingham Forest game where we won, what was it, 3-0?
2-0, 2-0, yeah.
2-0 in the end, but certainly Forest forced a fair few very good saves from Ali Alhabsi, and I think Ali Alhabsi actually won man of the match for that game.
He did, yeah.
Whereas Burton, I mean, I think they had a bit of a... I think in the first 10-15 minutes, they sort of came at us and, you know, challenged us a little bit. But I don't remember Ali Alhabsi making any worldy saves.
They had no cutting edge, did they? And that was what we were coming into the game, again, talking to Charles on Friday. It's what we talked about. They had Chris O'Grady and Stuart Bevan up front, who I think between them have won goal in all competitions. They're struggling for goals. They hadn't scored in 4 out of their previous 5 games. And it was the difference between the two sides. I remember Yeovil, when they came up from League One to the Championship, similar size club. It was exactly the same problem for them. They didn't have that ability to get a goal. And Reading just had those extra little moments of quality, be it a ball into the box or a player being at the right place at the right time, just to put them away.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we've seen in the last 4 games as well, really. We have beaten teams that are in the bottom 5, but I think we've shown our quality by beating those sides. Because like I said, to knock 10 goals in those 3 or 4 games, and not concede any just shows that at the moment we have the confidence and the quality to put those teams to the sword.
Yeah, and to be fair, the Burton Mail said that they could argue that this was Burton's worst 90 minutes of the season. But like you say,
how much was it us making them look bad?
Exactly. And you've got to put away the bad teams. I mentioned Yeovil. In that Nigel Adkins season, we played. They had eight men by the end of the game. We couldn't put them away. It's a mark of a great side that you can beat those teams that are in and around the bottom, because it doesn't take much for heads to drop. And the fact is, Stam's sides are getting in front. They're staying in front. Mm. And the defence as well. We mentioned four clean sheets. Ali Alhabsi named both the website's player of the month and the club's official player of the month. No surprise there at all. And well deserved. He didn't have too much to do. The defence in front of him, I think Liam Moore just impresses me, forgive the pun, more and more with every game.
And more and more and more. Yeah, there's really not too much to say about his performance. He is confident on the ball. He's strong in the tackle. He's strong in the air. And he's only, what, 23, 24?
Yeah.
Mentally, that side of the game can only improve. And I think, you look at the sort of the cornerstones of this side, if you like, and he's certainly one of those.
What did you make of the dynamic of it? Because it was a bit of a formation change from Yapstown. I mean, we'll come on in news bites to some of the injuries. We've already mentioned Kermit. John Swift, obviously the big one, not in the team as well. Stephen Quinn dealing with a problem as well. And Joey Vandenberg. Saw him kind of go to a bit of a 3-4-3 formation. And it's funny because I noticed Chris Coleman talking about this very same formation on Monday Night Football and talking about how it's a great formation for him because it's very adaptive. And it can change quickly. And I think we saw a lot of that on Saturday. Ostensibly, you had the three centre-backs. You had Tyler Blackett, Paul McShane and Liam Moore. Obita and Gunter out wide. Williams and Evans in the middle. And then you had Behrens just in behind, sort of McCleary and Samuel. How do you think it worked? Especially, I'm curious what you thought of sort of the defensive unit.
Well, I thought the defensive unit was very good because you had those three players who, almost exclusively stuck back, aside from McShane, who... McShane sort of drifted into a bit of a right-back position at times, and I think we've seen that from him in previous games under Yapstam. He sort of said to McShane, go and cover Chris Gunter, who gets forward. Now, Chris Gunter's a player who is very much used to that position because he does play it for Wales, as you said, with Chris Coleman. And I think Jordan Obita, it plays to his strengths as well, because we know that Jordan Obita is a player who would like to be a winger, perhaps. Although maybe after playing 3 or 4 years at left back, he's finally got used to that.
Well, he said himself for a long time, he says he wants to be number 10.
11. Yeah. He wears number 11. So, so I think it suits him as well. And you see that he puts across the cross for Danny Williams' goal. And I think, overall, it was a formation that worked very well because, especially with Tyler Blackett there as well, I think Tyler Blackett had his best game in a Reading shirt so 100% far.
100% agreed.
I'm not sure that he was man of the match, but he was certainly very, very impressive. And I think that sort of showed you that he's more of that centre-back than left-back, really. And when the pressure wasn't on him to get forward, the pressure was simply on him to mop anything up and stay back. He performed very well. In terms of in the middle, I mean, you had Danny Williams. He made a charging run into the box. We wanted a central midfielder to do that for
Damn
years.
Damn right.
Nearly missed it as well. quite a funny sequence as he sort of hit the bar, it went in, then he picked it up, then he blasted it in as if to say, right, yeah, that definitely went in.
Counts as double. Yeah. It's playground rules.
Oh, yeah. I think a really impressive performance. And, yeah, even Gareth McCleary playing in a little bit of an unorthodox position up front. But again, he had that pace to trouble the defenders. And I think when you've got the two... almost the dual threat of McCleary and Samuel. You've got to drop back for both of them, essentially. And that allowed us to really keep control of the game, especially with so many ball players in the side. Yapstam has got, he's, for better or worse, he's jettisoned players like Jake Cooper, who you wouldn't trust in that situation to receive the ball and find another man. That's what it's all about. It's about creating those options, creating those angles. And that's what the team did really well. And, you could see that Burton were essentially a League One side in the Championship. And we were an upper Championship side. And I think it's testament to the way that Yapstam has built his squad and trained them that we never, ever looked in danger. And I think particularly in the second half, we didn't really create much. And I know there's a bit of frustration from the fans, like, come on, let's get four, let's get five. But you don't really need to risk anything, do you?
Yeah, it was funny because I was sat on the bus on the way back next to someone who said, oh, I really wish they'd gone for the jugular. Mm. And I'm sat there, and yeah, from an entertainment standpoint, yeah, sure. But they're coming into a long part of the season. They had the game completely won. You don't need... Just keep the ball. Don't... Mm. What's the point in tiring yourself out for one extra goal? Mm. As much as I'd love to see it and celebrate. I can completely understand it. And professional is the word that I find myself increasingly using about this Reading side. They are very professional about the way they go things. But one comparison this weekend that's come out from the Football on Five show, I believe, former Reading assistant manager Martin Mad Dog, don't call me Mad Dog, Martin Allen, comparing Reading in the same sentence, I believe, to Barcelona and Manchester City. We have entered bizarro world, Johnny.
I'm not sure about Manchester City, because I think Manchester City haven't really kept many clean sheets. Or at least we're doing that. And as for Barcelona, well, I think someone else made the pun, but I think it's good to see the Catalans getting a little bit of credit.
Well, quite possibly, yeah. You know, it's always
being
nice.
Being compared
exactly.
to Reading.
You know.
Lionel Messi just phoning up Gareth McCleary for a few tips. After all, that is the chant, isn't it? Gareth McCleary makes Messi look subpar.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how it goes. But, you know, you look at the possession again. They've 60% possession. They have been outshot, which I found a surprising stat. 17-10, apparently, they were outshot, which doesn't add up to me, but, you know, my eyes clearly deceive me.
No, but I think, you know, I've said this in previous editions of the show. We've been outshot a number of times. But we're clinical, and you said you'd use the word professional. I'd use the word clinical, not only in terms of how we score and how we shoot and how we create chances, but also in terms of how we close down games. And you know, sometimes it can be a little bit boring. I mean, the atmosphere, admittedly, you know, wasn't the best, especially in the second half when we were just sort of passing it around, playing keep ball. But you know. But as much as anything, it wears the opposition out as well, because they have to chase around. They have to think, when are we next going to get the ball? When are we next going to be able to create a chance? And that's all you can do, really. The last thing you want is at 2-0 up, Burton get a chance. Their band of travelling brewers with the drummer as well, by the way.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that, actually. We should have had a bit of duelling drummers, like duelling banjos.
Okay, interesting.
That's what I think. But no, I mean, the last thing you want is for them to get a goal back, and suddenly, you know, they're confident and our backs are against the wall a little bit.
Yeah.
Close it out, close it down, job done.
Yeah, and get used to closing out games, because you will come up against tougher opposition, and having that ability and that sort of ingrained memory of how to close out games and the experience of doing it will only help them. So again, yeah, okay, it sacrifices 20, 25 minutes of entertainment for the fans, but over the long run, it helps the side, and that's all you can ask. So 3-0, we're up to third in the league, still trailing Brighton and Newcastle. But we asked this question a couple of weeks ago, Johnny. Do Reading deserve to be where they are? And increasingly, you can say with an authoritative voice, yes, they do deserve to be where they are.
Like I said, I'm going to sound pessimistic when I say this, but you do go back and look at these four results and you say, well, it's against teams in the bottom five. But then, like you said and like we said earlier, this team a year ago or 2 years ago would not have got four wins and four clean sheets from these games.
No.
We'd have slipped up at Rotherham. On another day, we'd have bottled it at home to Forest, who for a large part of the first half were in the ascendancy. So, yes, we've got four wins. Yes, it's against four of the worst teams in the division at the moment. And I do think greater tests will come. Like I said last week, or 2 weeks ago, we've got, I think, seven of the next nine games are against top half opposition. So when it will come January, and come January the 1st, not only will we have played 23 games, which is obviously the halfway point, and give or take, you've played every team in the division, pending, you know, certain fixtures being out of place, then we'll certainly have a very good idea. But the one thing that this is doing is building confidence amongst the team and amongst the fan base. What you want to do now is go into these tests against the likes of Bristol City, against the likes of Fulham, against the likes of Norwich, on the back of wins, on confident, and knowing that you can go 1-2-0 up and close out games.
Yep.
It's great to have that experience, like you say, have that experience in the bank and be ready to use it.
And go into the game with that swagger that comes from being third in the league. To say, and you've got
Fortress
the
Medeski.
You've got the confidence. You've got, well, you know what? We can play. We can score goals. Mm. I know what I'm doing. I'm confident in what I'm doing. You've not got players going into it on the back of form, worrying and snatching at chances and things like that. They're in the perfect environment. Success breeds success. Old adage. Yap Stam's comments on the game. He said, it's good to win games, Thanks, Yap. It's good to win games and it's good to get points because there are a lot of games to be played in the league, in this league this season. Hopefully we can stay up there, but we're not aiming for that third or fourth spot yet. We're not focused on getting to a certain position in the table. I keep repeating myself, there's a long way to go. So, very media savvy from Yap. Again, he's not saying anything that you wouldn't expect any other manager to say, but level-headed and honest as normal. I just do wonder in the back of my head, I wonder what he is targeting or what his targets were and if they've changed.
Well, I think certainly at the start of the season, I think the target would have been top half, a respectable 12th. I mean, if we went back to one of the podcasts we did at the start of the season, where were we predicting? It was around that sort of 12th mark. I think I actually went for something like 18th and 20th, and I'm certainly being made to eat my words right now. And in terms of... Yeah, I mean, it's always difficult to say. If there were to be a massive drop-off now, you'd still call it a successful season in the context of what we've seen this season and what we've seen in the last few years as well.
Given the way we finished last season and the season before that, for that matter, there were some genuine fears that they could be involved in a relegation. But, well, who is it? The TalkSport's notorious The Moose tipping us as one of the teams to go down. And you could make a very fair argument that Reading were amongst those teams that might struggle. They've already got... What is it,
31 points?
And you need 50 usually to stay up. So on the very most basic of level, Stam has done pretty much what he needs to do because it would take, like you say, a ridiculous run of results in the next 25 odd games for them to be sucked into anywhere near a relegation battle. So that's...
Which means Skybet get to keep my 50 quid.
Oh, did you bet on Reading to get relegated?
Of course I did.
Well, you know, it's insurance betting,
isn't it? People call me pessimistic. I like to said I like to think I was realistic at the time.
Mm. Well, hashtag gamble away. But yeah, third in the table. Stiffer challenges to come, as we'll get on to a little later in the show. But in the meantime, we do have a few news bites to get on with.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So just a few news bites to get on with, and we'll start in the treatment room, which is unfortunately, Johnny, filling up a little bit. We touched on a couple of the injuries there. Jan Kermigan, he's got a knee problem. He's having injections. Stam, a bit concerned that he's not having the response that he wants with it at the moment. It's one they're going to monitor. Obviously missed that game with Burton. He's a doubt for Saturday's game with Bristol City. One man we do know will be out of that game and for several weeks to come is John Swift. I know this is going to hit you particularly hard, Johnny.
Heartbreaking.
Injury, picked up, was ankle injury on under-21 duties with England. And
yeah, I mean, I was watching the game. It didn't look that bad because he did walk off. Although with ligament injuries, it does tend to be, you don't necessarily know how bad it is until you get the scan. So... It looked like he just twisted his ankle and he was being taken off for precautionary reasons, but clearly not.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's ruled out for 6 weeks, so we've had one of those weeks. So another 5 weeks puts him back around about the start of January, maybe around the FA Cup third round dates. And hopefully he does recover well and, you know, the break might do him good. And if Brennan can keep up these results in his absence, just having him back will be... I mean, you saw the boost when he came back last time.
Do we need him?
Yes, we do. Okay. Let's not get carried away. Okay. Joe Vandenberg also dealing with an injury. He's got a knee problem that's keeping him out. Yap is hopefully might be able to join in with the group this week ahead of this game on Saturday. And Stephen Quinn as well, again talking with Charles on Friday. It's just a persistent knee problem that just seems to be every time he sort of gets near it, just sort of breaks down a bit. And it's a real blow because, you know, my love for Quinny is almost as strong as your love for Swift. But he's exactly the type of player you want on that bench and in and around that squad. And getting him fit and getting all of those four players fit will be a real priority for Stam because while the squad is coping well, the depth is starting to run a bit low.
Yeah, and, you know, Swift, Vandenberg and Quinn, all central midfielders or certainly players that you could put in the middle of the park. And, I mean, it's great to see players like Liam Kelly getting a game from the bench. I think he came on for sort of like the last 5 or 10 minutes. But, you know, there is that argument to say, well, you don't want to have to throw these players in. And were someone like Evans or Williams to now pick up an injury, then you would be forced to throw in players like Liam Kelly, like Josh Barrett, who are in the youth system. And that's, you know, you don't necessarily want to give these players a baptism of fire. You want to be able to ease in the youngsters and let them get the right experience of first team football.
Yeah, I mean, the 2005-2006 squad was the perfect example, really. Yes, you had those squad players. You had your John Osters, your Stephen Hunts, your Chris Makins. But they only sort of came in for little stretches.
Yeah.
And that's what you need them for. We saw almost last season with Steve Clarke that when Aaron Tischbowler got injured and he had to play players like Pearson a bit more, that things just started to break down a bit. And suddenly the squad depth you thought you had wasn't strong, because suddenly they went from being squad players to regulars and they just couldn't really step up. So thankfully at the moment everyone's stepping up and doing their jobs, but the more depth you have the better. Obviously the January transfer window is just around the corner as well, and Stamford said he will be sitting down with every member of his squad to talk about their futures. Contract talks ongoing with several players, including Liam Kelly. As you mentioned, there was a few whispers that he might be linked with Rangers. Doesn't seem to be any real substance to those. He is out of contract in the summer.
I honestly don't think a player of his stature would survive in Scotland.
Well, you never know.
It just strikes me as a far more physical league. Having not watched much Scottish football.
It is, but then, the classic example everyone points out, Lionel Messi. You wouldn't think he would.
This is very true.
He would survive, and he has beaten every team in the world twice over. So credit to him, because, you know, and
he's
I think...
He's still not as good as Gareth McCleary, though.
He isn't. No, he is made to look subpar, as you said earlier. Yeah. So lots being discussed, hopefully, on the contract front. We do have several players out, as mentioned. Liam Kelly's out of contract in the summer. Aliel Habsey's another one. Gareth McCleary's contract situation is a little bit more complicated because there is an option there.
I think Jake Cooper.
Cooper could be, could well be one of them. There's Jan Kermigan is another one as well. So, and Danny Williams, another big player as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because you don't really want that getting into January without their futures tied up, because then you get even more speculation. So it remains to be seen what happens there. One other piece of news, briefly touched on the Checker Trade Trophy earlier. Reading getting beat 2-0 at home by Yeovil. Attracted less than 1,000 fans to the Medeski Stadium. There's still more people there than I thought it was going to be. Not a great display from the under-23s, it must be said. They didn't really create a lot, and they were beaten by a League Two side with plenty of experience. So, but the good news was that results elsewhere meant that they were already through before the game was even played. They finished second in the group, and as a result, they meant that they would get an away tie. That tie turned out to be Southampton's under-23s, Johnny. So it's an all-academy affair in the Football League Trophy.
Yeah, and I certainly think Southampton is, you know, it's definitely one of the better academies out there. If you look at the amount of players, I mean, again, I was watching the England under-21s, and I think the goal that they scored in the very last minute was taken by James Ward-Prowse, a corner, headed towards goal by Callum Chambers, ex-Southampton, and prodded in by some centre-back that I'd never heard of, who also plays for Southampton. And, you know, the production line at Southampton it's absolutely outstanding. The work they've done there in recent years is absolutely amazing to sell off so many players and keep, you know, steady in the Premier League. So this will be a very good test for our academy, and certainly a good gauge of where we are in terms of against what I'd probably say is the best academy in the Premier League or in England.
Yeah, well, they've already played. They play each other in the Premier League 2 competition, which is the new name for the under-23s league, which was the under-21s league. Southampton won that game earlier this season 2-0. Happened to catch a few minutes as well of them playing Chelsea under-23s, although it was an under-23s Chelsea team that also had John Terry and Cesc Fabregas and several other players in. And they looked a very impressive side. They are doing well. I think they're third or fourth, compared to Reading's ninth in that league at the moment. So the odds are stacked against them. The one thing that might help Reading is the fact that that week, Southampton, I think it's the week commencing the 5th, Southampton are playing in the Europa League. So there won't be any sort of temptation to play senior players. Reading have that midweek free. So you just wonder whether Stan might just send a few sort of your likes of your Joseph Mendes's, your Maytays in, and that might just tip the balance. But everything in this competition is a bonus, really. We've discussed it in previous podcasts about the whole merits of whether we should be in it in the first place. So,
and just quickly as well, on the subject of the under-23s, I believe on Wednesday they're playing Athletic Bilbao.
We are.
In the much-vaunted under-23s Champions League.
Continental Cup, something like that, isn't it?
Whatever it's called. Get yourself down to Adams Park in Wickham to see some Hispanic flair.
We start of our European tour. At home.
At home in Wigan. Nearby Buckinghamshire.
It's basically continental Europe. It's all of the games in that competition being played in England. So unfortunately, there's no chance to go to sunny Spain. But
they don't do the final in like the San Siro or the Stadio da Luz or something.
I don't think so. It'll probably be Boreham Wood. Ugh. Glamorous Boreham Wood. Sorry, people in Boreham Wood. I'm sure it's a very nice place. And finally, Johnny, in the feature that you help run on the Tireless End, Yapstam's approval rating.
Yeah, so as regular readers will know, we ask you to rate how you're feeling about Yapstam from 1 to 5, where 1 is the lowest and 5 is the highest. And he's got the highest rating that you've ever given a manager in the just over a year that we've been running it. So that includes Steve Clarke during his glorious run and his less than glorious run and his attempted run to Fulham and his
lots of runs
and his run out of the club, and it includes Brian McDermott and his not quite so well received return and his mixed reception to when he left, and of course Yapstam's time here. And like I say, 4.29 out of 5 was the rating that you've given him for November, and yeah, it's the highest rating. I think Steve Clarke at the peak of his powers, just after we'd gone on that sensational run and we were second, was about 4.2. So now this is the highest Yap's been, and it's the highest any manager has been.
Yeah,
whilst we've been running these polls.
Yeah, and it's, you know, shows the confidence and the self belief. Now, do I think Yapstam's done the best job of a manager in that time? Yeah. Do you know what? Actually, I'd say I will, given the resources he's had. He has had the benefit of a completely clean slate, which I don't think either of the two men before him had.
Certainly not McDermott.
No. But, you know, he's done fantastic well. He's exceeded all expectations, I think, except for the most optimistic of fans. So fully deserves that mark. I would still be hovering closer to a 4 than a 5, personally. I still think there's work to be done. I still do think he has made some mistakes, some questionable decisions, but he's a young manager, first year in the league. Those are to be expected. So, fantastic effort. Long may it continue. The only thing is now is that Reading are increasingly, our little status we had of going under the radar is very quickly disappearing. Yeah, we are very much on the radar now.
Sadly, the Goliath of Newcastle isn't quite enough to cover us anymore.
No. We're out in the open. Our little success story is out there. And we said this very first when he got appointed, didn't we? That the more success he has, the less time he's probably going to be at Reading. But if the club goes up at the same time he does, I think we'll all be happy.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yep, indeed. Right, that wraps up News Bites. We're not going to have a pub chat this week. It's just me and Johnny. So we like to save the pub chats for when there's three of us or if there's a real burning topic. So we'll save that for in the next couple of weeks when we're reunited as a trio. So in the meantime, we will move on to your topics that you brought up in this week's mailbag.
The Tilehurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So a massive thank you to everyone who has got in touch with us via the mailbag, to at the Tilehurst End on Twitter, thetilehurstend@gmail.com, and at facebook.com/thetilehurstend. And we start with the Mad Stad, who's asked the very easy question to start us off with: how long until it all goes wrong? With a little smiley face.
That's the sort of pessimism we're used to on this podcast, isn't it? It's not going to go wrong, Mad Stad. It's not going to go wrong. We're surging towards promotion, or at least the playoffs, and more heartbreak. That's when it will go wrong.
Yeah,
when we're all marching up Wembley Way.
Indeed. In all seriousness, though, you know, we're self-admitted gambling men, #gambleaware. If you had to flip a coin, just the adage, is your glass half full or half empty at the moment? Are you fearing the worst from this point, or are you optimistic that it might get even better?
That's a tough question. I mean, I'm certainly more optimistic than I was at the start of the season. I think if we add a striker now, we're certainly a playoff side. I think the players have more than impressed me. I was a bit worried about the recruitment because, I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of many of the players and I didn't think they perhaps had the pedigree. But Yapstam has got them playing well, and those players have shown that they are better, and they are better than many of us thought. And I mean, it's the old adage, isn't it? The sum of the parts. And it does seem like this team is a team that is going together at the moment.
But how strong is that little voice in the back of your head right now that is saying how long till it all goes wrong? Is it a very quiet voice, or is it quite a loud voice?
I don't think it will go wrong, but I think I still don't think we're top two material. I'll put it that way. I think certainly playoffs, but I'm not sure that we're top two.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you. I very much think that this squad now, with the position they've got themselves in and what they've shown and the players, if everyone gets back fit, which is another big question, and also, again, with the right recruitment in January and presuming they don't lose anyone, but all things being equal, as they are now, there is no reason they can't finish in the top six. I would say my glass is half full. Do I think they're going to finish in the top six? I think as an eternal pessimist, my heart will always tell me, no, it'll all go wrong, as Madstad jokes there. But the logical side of me says, you know, I've seen just about every team in this division. Reading have competed with every team, even Newcastle, who everyone is lauding as head and shoulders. If Reading hadn't been on the end of a couple of unfortunate penalty calls in that game, we could have been talking about a win at St James's Park. So they've got nothing to fear. It's just they've just got to keep doing what they're doing, and that is the X factor equation, the big £1 million question that we'll only know when we get to game 46. Right, Hugh, one of our crowd funding cohorts, I believe, at least I hope. If not, why are you not?
Credit where credit's due, Dan.
Indeed. Anyway, he says, given that the last four games are against weaker sides, we find out how good we really are in the next three games. You sort of touched on that earlier, Johnny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the next three games are against Bristol City at home, Fulham away, and then Sheffield Wednesday at home. And yeah, like I said, I think the next three games, the next six games, and like next nine games are really going to show you how good you are, because they're against better teams, and also it takes you to that halfway stage of the season where you can realistically say you've played most of those sides. I mean, Fulham, Sheffield Wednesday and Bristol City are 8th, 9th and 10th. So that will, yeah, at this very early stage of the season, that will tell you, okay, are we better than the teams that are 8th, 9th and 10th? Okay, well that means we're a top 7 side, doesn't it?
Exactly.
It is not, obviously not as simple as that, but
Yeah.
These are the teams. We say that you've got to beat the lower teams, but you've also at least got to get results against those teams that are chasing you as well in order to keep it up.
I very much agreed. Alex, what key area needs strengthening in January? And do you have any examples of players that could be brought in? I've unfortunately said this many times in the 106 episodes that have preceded this one. I find this question ridiculously hard, if not impossible, to answer, because I don't know who's available. I don't know what the club's budget is. And I don't know the attitudes of some of these players. So I'm gonna skirt around that question. I'm sorry, Alex, unless there's anyone. Have you got anyone in mind, Johnny, that springs to mind, using your extensive Football Manager knowledge?
Well, this is exactly what I was going to go on, is what I did on Football Manager to get Reading promoted. Thank you. By the playoffs, by the way. I can't remember. I think we played Brighton 1-0 after extra time. So,
well, what an unrealistic game, Reading winning playoff games. Carry on.
Yeah, and after extra time as well. That's not going to happen after Walsall, is it? Anyway, examples of players. Well, I think the striker is the obvious main position to bring in. Like I said, I don't think Jan Kermagan is the person that's going to fire you at the top of the table to promotion. And Dalton Tamuil, whilst he had a good 65-70 minutes against
Burton,
like, you know, I worry about his frame and him getting through a 46 game season.
Well, I just think the body of strikers as a whole, and if you include Yaku Meite, Dennis Rackles and Joseph Mendes as well, you
forget
still
about
need
Rackles,
that,
don't you?
Yeah, you still need that. For me, you need that X factor striker. You need that guy that, like a Lafondre when he was on form, the guy that you can rely on to get you a goal when you're chasing it. Your Jason Roberts type, that's going to really turn games and give some teams things to worry about.
I am going to throw a name out there, because we do seem to know about scouting all over the world now, and this is again a Football Manager based person. Isaac Kiese-Thielin, I think that's how you say it.
Oh, that, yes, him, of course.
Yeah, that one, yeah. He's Swedish and he's quite tall, and he's good on Football Manager, so he's good in real life.
Excellent.
And he's a striker.
On that note, we immediately need to go out and sign Cherno Samba.
I'm just texting Brian Teverin and his details.
Yeah, very much so. But yeah, I think the striker is the key one. I think another midfielder. I think we've seen in the last couple of weeks that when they do get an injury or two, that area is a position that does look, like you mentioned, one more injury and they're really sort of...
But then we're down to Sandro Wiese, who is a Liechtenstein international, but can't get anywhere near a squad.
Captain the under-23s against Liverpool the other day.
Well, that's why we bought him, isn't it? For the Checker Trade Trophy.
Yeah, and Premier League 2, of course. Yeah. So yeah, another midfielder would also be pretty high on my list. Tim Redmayne says, is Yap's relentless instance on being realistic regarding our promotion chances killing match attendance? So do you think he's almost keeping the excitement, I suppose, levels down too much?
Do you know any manager that comes out after a game and says, yeah, we absolutely battered them, we're going to win the league now?
No, although Neil Warnock has said some similar type things.
Yeah, and Ian Holloway has some sort of mixtape of...
It's a very bombastic style.
Hilarious gaffes. I don't think it's killing attendance. You have to look at what that game against Burton was. It was a bloody cold afternoon. They only brought about 300 people down and a drummer. I'm going to keep mentioning that drummer. I think more away teams should...
You're going to keep
drummers.
Banging the drum about it.
Please don't. Was he attends about 16,000? And, you know, you're just getting into December or, you know, a bit of Christmas shopping and stuff. And, you know, are you, if you're a casual Reading fan, going to say, well, if there's one game I want to go to this year, it's Burton at home? I don't think the attendances are necessarily falling or struggling. I just think it's a case of, as fans do, they will turn up for the big games. You know, you come to, I think it's in March, we play Newcastle at home. That is going to be a sellout. Same with the likes of Norwich, I'd imagine, on Boxing Day. Or is it Norwich? I think it's Norwich.
Norwich on Boxing Day, yeah.
You know, I think those... You've got to be realistic. Unless we are in the top two or absolutely flying, we don't sell out.
Well, the classic example is the 2005-2006 season. And if you actually look at the attendances in the first half of that season, even the 2011-12 promotion season, the attendances didn't really take off until... Now, I remember in the 05-06 season, it was the half-season ticket rush where everyone sort of knew we were going to go up and wanted to get their seats ready for next season. The fans will come, but I think there is a danger if Stam went the other way and started saying, we're playing some brilliant attacking football, we are going places, we are going to be right in there fighting for promotion, come down and see us. There is a danger of fans turning up and expecting too much and suddenly turning the atmosphere into one... And the last thing I think he wants, because it's still a young side, it's still a developing side, I don't think you want that added pressure and an expectant atmosphere of fans that turn up expecting to see wins, expecting to see goals. Because if you turn up expecting those things, I'm sorry, but you're probably not going to get them, because the only time we scored multiple goals this season have been against awful sides. When we have played the better sides, yeah, we have picked up some great wins. It's been narrow margins. So... keeping the feet on the ground and letting this side grow, because then the buzz will grow organically. Like you say, the more wins they get, the more goals they do end up scoring. Fans are slowly going to go, they're going to see their results in the paper and go, you know what, they're playing some good football. I'm going to come down and watch this on my own. They won't sort of have that background, that sort of mentality that's been drummed into them, the propaganda machine, if you were, from a manager, sort of telling them, oh, you're going to see X, Y, and Z. Because then if they don't see it, they go home disappointed and they might not come back for a long time.
Yeah, no, you just brought up the drums again. That's all I was going to point out.
Well, I'm doing my best. Obviously, I'm getting paid commission on this one. So, we know what he's like. He's very level-headed, and I don't expect to see him banging the drum anytime soon. Chris Hartley. Tyler Blackett. Has he surprised you with how quickly he's settled in? Seems to give us the flexibility to be fluid in the formation we play.
Yeah, I think he has. I mean, you know, like I said earlier in the show, I think he's definitely shown with that performance against Burton that he's more of a centre-back than a left-back. I think he can do a job at left-back, but he doesn't give you that dynamism going forward that the likes of Jordan Obita do on that left flank. And I think, you know, quite frankly, that is the perfect formation for him, because I'd say he's one of the more limited ball-playing players in that team at the moment, I think. And he doesn't have much responsibility in that formation, aside from to mark and to tackle and to get rid of the ball to someone else. Whereas in the formations that we were playing with him at left-back before, there was a lot of reliance on him getting up the pitch, supporting his winger, occasionally putting a cross in, and we could see that he couldn't... That wasn't really...
No, wasn't natural.
That's what
he's strong
at.
There.
And so, yeah, I mean, you know, I think this 3-4-3 formation is very much going to be a bit of a luxury formation because, you know, like I said, would you trust someone like Jake Cooper to come in to do that? Or would you trust Tyler Blackett if he were forced to play in that wing-back role? Or, you know, if we were to bring in someone like Tene Watson instead of Chris Gunter, I'm not sure you'd...
I'm not sure you'd expect the same results, or I'm not sure that you would be able to play it in the same way. But you know, coming back to Tyler Blackett, I think you know you finally found what he is, which is he's a steady centre-back slash left-back who just gets on with his job, very good defensively. I don't think you should demand too much from him going forward.
Yeah, has he surprised me? Well, no, he's come from a Premier League side and was playing in the top division in Scotland last season. Joke what you will about the Scottish Premiership, but it's still quite a tough place to play your football. So I'm not surprised that he settled. This should be sort of the level he's aiming to play at the age he is now. So I've not been surprised. I didn't think, like you mentioned, Johnny, I don't think he was pulling up trees at left back. I think he was doing okay. And the sort of split he was having with Jordan Obita was kind of working. But yeah, I fully agree. I think to the left-hand side of that back three is where he feels most comfortable when he looked, you know, no surprise he had the best game we've seen. But again, stiffer challenges to come. So it remains to be seen, you know, if Stam continues to employ this formation, yet alone how well Tyler Blackett plays in it. Jack Symonds, if you could have any player back at the club who has left since relegation in 2013, who would you take? Presumably means 2012 from the Premier League. Oh, no, it was 2013. Yeah, 2012. Yeah, I apologise, Jack. Hands up there. Poor hosting. 10 lashes. Anyway, the question stands. So, Johnny, any player who has left the club since our relegation that you would have back right now?
Daniel Carrizo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, in this Stam side.
I'm so annoyed that he never stayed. And I mean, what's he done since? Won three Europa Leagues? Won the hat-trick of Europa Leagues. I think he was captaining them the other day in the Champions League as well. Oh, yeah, he would be... Yeah,
Swift and Carrizo in the midfield.
And
nice.
him in the holding role, and Swift bombing forward, and you just think... That would be absolutely sensational.
Yeah, I would. I've always got a soft spot for Jimmy Kebbe. If you could offer me form motivated Jimmy Kebbe. Again, are we talking about the players as they are now or as they were then?
Yeah.
If you gave me Pete Jimmy Kebbe, I'd love him. Jem Karashan, in the form he was in just before that injury. Remember, he scored those two goals against Watford. He was just. You finally thought, this is a guy that is ready to move to the next level, and just injuries just really wore him down. Mm. I'd have that as well. I mean, but other players that have left, we've seen, you know, defensive-wise, Sean Morrison and Adrian Mariappa. Wouldn't particularly take them. Goalkeeping-wise, Alex McCarthy, maybe. Although, again, his career's sort of stalled since then. Up front, Adam Lafonja, Pavel Pogrebniak. No, not really. Jason Roberts, though. Again, Jason Roberts technically leaving.
Yeah, Jason Roberts with two hips.
Yeah, if you give me the fully hipped Jason Roberts. Mm. I think Jason Roberts, you know, if you give me that 2011-12 Jason Roberts.
In this side, yeah.
Just perfect for this team. Mm. Just, and you saw the difference he made to that Brian McDermott side. So, yeah, that would be my answer. So, yeah, get your suggestions in.
Just a quick one. I think Aaron Tischboller would have been nice to... Would have been nice to see how he developed rather than have to sell him and, you know, not have that luxury. I mean, I think I was one of the few people who sort of said, you know, Will, it's a fair price what we got for him, and he'll have to, you know, develop elsewhere. But it would have been nice to hold on to him and see how he develops, especially in this Stam side.
Oh, he's certainly a massive talent, just from what we've seen. Although, again, he's struggling to get into the Aston Villa side. Steve Bruce doesn't really seem... to rate him at the moment.
That's the danger, isn't it? When one manager signs you and then he's out the door a month later.
Yeah, we've seen it with people like Adam Lafondra, goes to Cardiff and then just can't get in the side and the career stagnates. So I'm sure Tischboller's talent will shine through, if he can stay fit, that is. And one of our most loyal of listeners, Valdemar Janoszak. Who in the current team is genuinely irreplaceable? With no like-for-like out there. For me, it's Danny Williams.
Is that irreplaceable from the bench or irreplaceable from a transfer point of view?
I just think generally sort of in the squad. So if player X goes down right now, you're going, oh, we're completely screwed.
Liam Moore?
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose because you could argue you could fudge your way through it with Blackett and McShane in there.
But you wouldn't feel as confident, would you? I mean, I mean, this was something I was going to suggest for a pub chat, and you know that essentially is who's the most valuable player in the team, who's the one player who's the MVP so far.
Well, I suppose the question is irreplaceable. I think for me, a lot of it is John Swift. I don't think anyone else can really do what John Swift does. I mean, we didn't talk about it too much, and Roy Behrens, he got the assist, but I didn't think he was amazing in that sort of attacking midfield role.
It was good for him to get productive again.
I didn't think he had a bad game, but I don't think he was at Swift at his best sort of level. But then, as we said, we've just won a game 3-0 without him. So is he irreplaceable?
I think I'd go for Swift, just because it's certainly Swift or Moore. I think Moore is more replaceable in a sense, because you do get ball playing centre backs now who are comfortable and, you know, who are very steady. Whereas I think John Swift has so much quality that you would have to pay a bunch to replace him.
The other player I'd throw into the mix is Gareth McCleary. And if you look at Reading's form, especially since McCleary came back from his suspension, I mean, it's been just excellent. Really, really excellent. And you think, suddenly, if you took him out the side and you had a front unit of Behrens, Harriet and Kermigan or Samuel, have you still got quite that threat?
Yeah, you haven't got that name in there, have you, really?
No. So, a few contenders there. So, sorry, we're not going to... Well, I can't really settle on one. Maybe... No, I think I've talked myself into Gareth McCleary.
I think I'd go for... most important player in the team, Liam Moore. Who's the most irreplaceable John Swift?
But what about, as you know, we owe it to Valdemar. What about Danny Williams? He puts Danny Williams forward as his player.
Yeah, no, I think Danny Williams, especially at the moment, is performing very well, because he's got a lot of responsibility in that midfield to carry the ball and to distribute it and to have a few shots as well. But like you say, I think you could just probably just about get someone else to do that job in there. Someone like, George Evans could probably do that water carrier
Barrett
role.
Maybe.
Yeah, or, you know, back in the day, someone like Jem was quite similar in that sense.
I think
endless energy and...
Yeah, Stephen Quinn, I think, could probably fill in again if he was fit. So thank you very much to everyone who has contributed into the mailbag at the Tarlest End at the Tarlest End on Twitter, thetarlestend@gmail.com or facebook.com/thetarlestend. Right, time to preview our next championship game, which is against Bristol City, and that comes in Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
So as we mentioned, the next up on the Reading Championship bandwagon is Bristol City, who visit the Malacey Stadium on Saturday. They currently sit 10th in the Championship, which is 7 points behind us. They've won one in their last six, and their last away win came on September the 24th. So they were a team that were putting a real run together a few weeks ago, and they've just sort of hit a sticky patch. Tammy Abraham, the big star name there on loan from Chelsea, 9 goals in 16 starts this season. But again, as his goals have dried up, so has the team's form. He's only bagged once in the last seven. Looking at that team and what you have seen and heard of Bristol City this season, how big a test are you expecting for Reading?
Well, like I said, I think it will be a big test simply because they are, you know, a top 10 side who have a decent amount of quality, a striker who, well, look, if you score 9 goals in 16 games, then certainly you've got something about you. So it's certain that they will fancy their chances of scoring. I mean, you know, their last two games, they've lost 1-0 against Birmingham and 2-0 against Brighton. And those are two teams that are in the top five. So... certainly, you know, in the last two games, you can certainly say that they've got an excuse to lose. I mean, it's somewhat of a local derby, I guess. I think, you know, they'll be up for it. But we're flying at the moment, you know. And this is what I said earlier about, yes, we may have got 4 wins, 4 clean sheets against 4 inferior teams. But what you do is you take that experience and you take that confidence through to a game like this. And you say, well, this is going to be a bigger test, but we know how to deal with it.
And this is it. You then ask, you say to the likes of Liam Moore, Tyler Blackett, stand up, show me you can keep Tammy Abraham quiet. You challenge Dom Samuel, get past a top 10 championship defence. You know, you challenge these
defense.
Players. Defence. Get through on defence.
Getting a bit American there.
Yeah, getting a bit of football in there. Anyway, but you challenge these players to step up and show that they can do it against the best teams. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, they take that positiveness, the positive power of positivity, so positive, as one Mr. Nigel Adkins once said. And there's no reason they can't beat. I mean, it's a team on paper. Look at it, Frank Fielding, okay, goalkeeper. Flint in the defence is all right. Lee Tomlin has shown that he can hurt teams in the past. And as we mentioned, Tammy Abraham. But otherwise, I mean, you look at that team and there's no one that hurts you. There's not a lot of players you would say, I want him in my Reading team.
I think Lee Tomlin a couple of years ago, well, I mean, he moved to... Has he moved to Borough for about £8 million?
I think he went Borough, and then was Bournemouth in there as well? Was there a spell at Bournemouth as well?
I think possibly when they initially went up, they bought him for stupid amounts of money. Marlon Pack, I mean, he's a decent enough player, I think. So, yeah, but, you know, equally, I'm sure that if you gave Bristol City the Reading lineup and said, you know, do you want the likes of Tyler Blackett or Jordan Obito, and they'd probably say, well, who? Sort of thing. So,
so
equally, it's... I it will certainly be the biggest test that we've had in the last five or six games, but I think this Reading side have shown that they are up to these sorts of challenges.
Fingers crossed. Hopefully. That they are. The bookmakers have this Reading 11-8 favourites. The draw is 9-4, and Bristol City are 2-1 to win this. So quite tight as far as the bookmakers go. They can't really... all three results quite close together. Not that that's particularly remarkable for match odds, but compared to some of the odds we've seen Reading's opponents in recent weeks, that is a lot shorter. In terms of the prediction league, we go into this game with Charles on top of the table on 19. Johnny, you correctly predicted the Burton game, so you move up to 18 points. Westie's on 17, I'm on 15. Handbags Harris, bottom of the league by 6 points, on 13. So as you are league leading at the moment, Johnny, I'm going to let you go first for this one.
I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Reading.
Okay, and
which I imagine will be quite a popular score to pick.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go on the other one. I'm going to go 1-0. I'm going to ride the 1-0, keep the clean sheet train running. And I will get predictions from Westie, the, as mentioned, ill Handbags Harris, and also from Mr. Charles Watts, hopefully on the podcast extra a little later in the week. Speaking of Podcast Extra and the podcast in general, if you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, I highly recommend, all bias aside, that you go and listen to last week's interview special. It was a sit-down interview that I did at the Badesky Stadium with the Reading Head of Communications, Mark Bradley, and the club's commercial director, Adam Benson. They answered a wide range of topics. There was nothing off the table. I can tell you, in all honesty, I left nothing on the cutting room floor. Incredibly open with me, talking about things like how much say the club have on kits, the decisions behind appointing DJ Mega Party, the ticket prices, why they're tiered that way, and some of the challenges they face. Lots of great topics on that sort of side. And you're getting to hear from people at the football club that you don't usually hear from. And they were very much open, and they want to hear from fans. They want to hear from you. They want this to be an open dialogue. So if you have got suggestions for them, please get in touch with the customer services at the football club. The email address for that is, I believe, customerservices@readingfc.co.uk. But check the previous article, as mentioned, that went along with that interview for that. Or if you've got any questions about who to get in touch with, just email us to thetylerstend@gmail.com. We'll do our best to point you in the right direction. As mentioned, hopefully we will get a few more interviews like that, Johnny, in the future.
I think we should get Mega Party on, don't you?
It's in the works. I can say it's in the works. I can't confirm it, but we are in negotiations to get him onto the show.
Wow.
I know. Depends what you want to say. I will honestly...
Is he aware that we call him DJ Megaparty?
I think he is now aware. I think he is aware of the name.
What did you write in the email? Dear Mr. Megaparty.
I've not... it will go through the club. The club are saying they're going to get him on. Some really... you know what? In all honesty, some really nice stories about Megaparty in that interview. Yeah. To the fact that he runs his own football team. His, I think it was his son... was part of one of those clubs, and I'm sure people out there will be very sympathetic. I went through a club like this when I was younger, where your manager was just obsessed with winning. Mm. He wasn't giving people a go. It was all about, I'm just going to win games. So he set up his own club, and it's grown to the point, I think, in the interview they say, I think they've got three or four different age groups and teams. So
are they in the Checker Trade Trophy next year?
Probably. So, some nice stories there. Adam Benson, the commercial director, a fascinating career that went from, he said, managing Atomic Kitten. He ran a restaurant in the south of France. And then he was involved with the Masters football series as well. Do you remember that?
No, bit too...
No, not the Masters. You know, it was fairly recent. Last few years, they basically had five-a-side teams made up of, like, club's legends. No?
No, skipped you by. Not, yeah.
Youngster that you are, Johnny. Anyway, some great stories in there, so I highly recommend you go and give that a listen. And our final, my plug of the day will be, again, for that Patreon campaign, patreon.com/thetylerstend. I gave that shout out to a long list of people at the top, Very much appreciated. It's helping fund improvements for the show. It's helping keep us afloat and also helping keep the motivation levels up, because I'll be honest, I've got in to do this podcast. I'm sitting in for traffic for 2 hours, and knowing that you've got people that actually care enough and really are invested in the show to the point where they're prepared to give a couple of quid every month over, just gives you that motivation to think, you know what, I'm not just going to blow this thing off and go and eat my tea and chill out. You know, we've got a show to do. Get on with it. Man up. So anyway, that's my venting of the M4 done. Johnny, been a pleasure as always.
Yeah, it has.
We will hopefully reunite next week. Now, although is the star, I should mention as well, the Star Fans Forum on Monday night at the Modeski Stadium. They're having several first team members along to that in the Princess Suite. So might try and go along to that on Monday. So it might push the show to Tuesday. I know that's news to you and it's probably very boring for everyone out there.
Yeah, I'm just putting that in my diary.
Yeah but yeah, again, go along. The fans forums at Star put on are usually really informative. Again, they're in a situation, there is a sort of set of rules where what's said in the room stays in the room. And thankfully, fans over the years have been really respectful of that, to the point where players now kind of trust you out there. So if you ask them a question, you're going to get a bit of a better answer or a more colourful answer than you'd get in your standard media interview. So again, highly recommend you go along and you can join up. It's free to all current Star members. And if you're not a member, you can join up on the night as well. So you can head over, you can message at Star Reading on Twitter for more info on that as well. Anyway, after that false ending, it's like Lord of the Rings here. Every time I think I'm wrapping up, there's something else to say. Johnny, as mentioned, it's been a pleasure. Thank you to everyone out there for listening and for everyone who supported us on Patreon. And in the meantime, we'll be back, as I said, with the podcast extra and the main edition of the show in the next few days. So in the meantime, got a new answer. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail. It's funny how they always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You know when it seems there's a hill trail. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. The crowds always leave a trail.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.